Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Alicia Graf Mack. She began her inaugural season as Dean and Director of Juilliard Dance in the fall of 2018. Before assuming that role, she enjoyed a distinguished career as a principal dancer of Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, Dance Theater of Harlem, and Complexions Contemporary Ballet. Ms. Graf Mack danced as a guest performer with Alonzo King's Lines Ballet, Beyoncé, John Legend, Andre 3000, John Batiste, and Alicia Keys, in addition to numerous appearances in galas, festivals, and nationally aired television shows. She graduated magna cum laude with honors in history from Columbia University and holds an MA in nonprofit management from WashU in St. Louis. In 2007, Smithsonian Magazine named her an American innovator of the arts and sciences. She is a recipient of the Columbia University Medal of Excellence, an award given each year to one alumnus who has demonstrated excellence in their field of work. She is also the recipient of the 2016 St. Louis Business Journal Diverse Leaders Award, the 2023 Abundance Leading Lady Award, and the prestigious 2023 Dance Magazine Award. As a dance educator, Ms. Graf Mack was an assistant professor at Webster University in 2010-11, and again in 2015-18, and taught as faculty at the University of Houston and Washington University in St. Louis. She is the co-founder of DNA Arts Collective, an initiative created with her sister to enrich the lives of young dancers through master classes and intensives. Alicia Graf Mack is the proud co-producer and host of a new podcast, Moving Moments, featuring authentic conversations with some of the most celebrated, groundbreaking artists in the field of dance. Alicia, thank you for joining us on SpondyCast today. We are so excited.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited for this conversation as well.
I am too. So you have overcome, like you've broken every barrier in I am so impressed, and I know we're going to talk a little bit today about your journey with AS. You were an up-and-coming dancer, and then AS interrupted into your life. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always so humbled to hear someone read my bio. And I feel like if people understood the timeline of everything, it would make no sense, because I think every step of the way really has been led by me living with ankylosing spondylitis and being a physical person and having a career in a physical activity. So I would love to explain the timeline of it all.
Yeah.
If I were like looking forward, you know, when I was going through everything, all the different pieces of my life really don't make sense. But if I look back on it now, how everything happened made so much sense. And there have been so many breaks in my dance career, and that was solely because of injury and illness. But I'm so grateful for those times in my life where I had to step away from dance, because it allowed me to understand who I am as a person and where my other talents and passions lie, which I never would have done had I gone completely through my dance career. You know, my dream was to become a ballerina, which I did at 17 years old, professional ballerina, and to do it for as long as possible until I was in my 40s, you know, retire, and then I had no idea what was going to be next. But that's not the way that my life unfolded. I can talk a little bit about my early beginnings and the first sort of seeds of when I knew something was going on.
Yeah.
If you'd like.
Yeah, I would love that. I think it's the journey is, yeah, I would love to hear when it started for you and how you worked through that and how you felt through some of that.
Yeah, it's so interesting because dancers are so in tuned with their bodies, right? Our bodies are our instrument, and we learn from a very young age how to basically shape and mold each muscle, how to use each body part as a means of expression. And so you know your body well. And I've been studying dance from the time I was 2.5 years old, and I was very serious by the time I was about 8 or 9 years old. I knew this is what I wanted to dedicate my life to. And at 11, that was it. I was already training to be a pre-professional dancer, a professional dancer, just as any Olympic athlete would. Like, I think of the young gymnasts who train so young for their early parts of their career. But actually, I remember when I was about 10 or 11, some joints would just become really inflamed. And I'd be like, Mom, I don't know why. Like, we would go to the doctor, they would drain it, they would test the fluid, nothing came up. And they would say, oh, it's growing pains, or she's in a really rigorous practice, physical practice. It's probably just swelling from like a lot of soreness, tension, what have you. And that was it. But I think those were actually the early signs of having some type of juvenile arthritis. In 1999, I was then a dancer with Dance Theatre of Harlem. It was one of my dream companies to land in this internationally acclaimed ballet company. It was run by Arthur Mitchell, who was my hero. He was the first Black principal dancer of New York City Ballet for many years, and then founded the Dance Theatre of Harlem as a way to open the field to Black and brown dancers. And so I was so honored to join this company. And I was touring right away and performing right away. And it was just awesome. And in my third year, I was performing to sold out houses and receiving rave reviews. And I just remember the same thing happening with my knee. I would just wake up and it would be blown up. Not a lot of pain, but just like blown up, like so swollen. And I went to see an orthopedic, and he again drained the fluid. That happened 3 times over a 6 month period. Every time the fluid was sent to a lab, blood tests, nothing came up. And it was just like, oh, maybe it's the rigors of the work. Maybe it's your mental facility, stressing out and like causing inflammation in your body. I'm like, okay. I mean, I know my work is high pressure, but I can't say that I'm like stressed out to the max, you know?
Right.
And so that's all it was. And I remember, I'm from Maryland originally. The theater that I used to see all the dance companies was the Kennedy Center. So I consider the Kennedy Center like my home theater. That's the place where I would sit into the audience and see all these ballerinas and think like, one day I'm going to be up there on that stage. And I was performing at the Kennedy Center with Dance Theatre of Harlem. And again, I woke up, my knee was huge. I had to get through the show. And this time I felt a good amount of pain. Yeah. And so after that run, I went to the orthopedist. He saw a small tear in my cartilage and was like, oh, okay, here's the source of the problem.
Sure.
And I should have, now with hindsight, you know, asked, do people normally get this swollen with a small cartilage tear? Like, most people don't even swell. You feel the pain, but it's not like debilitating, you know?
Right.
But I didn't, because there seemed like there was a solution. Like, there was a reason why, you know? And so I had the surgery to clean up the cartilage in my knee. And that was like the beginning of the end, because basically I had surgery on an infected, flared up knee.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually after 2 weeks with orthoscopic surgery like that, nothing was sewn. It was just a cleanup. You get back into PT and you get on your feet and you're ready to go. And after 2 weeks, it was even more swollen. So they were like, whoa, what's happening? And then after that, I was just bedridden because then I couldn't bend my knee. And then all of a sudden, my ankle started blowing up. And I'm like, I'm not even dancing. How is this happening? And my hip started hurting. And basically, the entire right leg just completely atrophied because I'd had the surgery, but I couldn't get into physical therapy because they said they couldn't do anything with me until the swelling goes down. So then from there, it was much more clear that there was something else happening than mechanical. And I literally spent a year trying to find the diagnosis. I went to several rheumatoid arthritis doctors in New York City. And me being a dancer, my facility is extremely flexible, right? So to say bend over and touch your toes, I mean, I could double myself.
Right. Over. Oh yeah.
To look at a joint and see that I'm so hypermobile. You know, a lot of diagnosis, a lot of doctors said, you're making this up in your head. You're stressing out about, you know, your future. And like, you should meditate. You should calm down. Like, you're too young to have rheumatoid arthritis or something like that. And again, it wasn't showing up in my blood tests.
That was my question. Like, were they testing for the baseline?
Yeah, they were testing. Yeah. I had so many tests. And finally, I actually have a cousin who is a rheumatologist who works for University of California, San Francisco, and is one of their leading rheumatologists. And finally, he said, Alicia, just send me all the lab work, all the paperwork that you've gathered over this year, and I'm going to have my team of doctors look and then come in and we're going to do a full like diagnosis. And actually, I was at first diagnosed with reactive arthritis with the various symptoms that I presented. And I was immediately put on a round of, at that time, sulfasalazine, I think was the name of the medication. And on top of that, then I had to go back to an orthopedist to take a look at my knee, which then had completely atrophied. My kneecap was just flopping like upside down when I would walk because everything just released, having not been able to use that leg for like a year. And so, and my ankle, we realized that there was a tendon that was not secured into a groove of my ankle bone. And so I, once things calmed down with the medication, then I had double surgery on my knee and my foot to correct all the atrophy that was happening with the tendons.
Wow.
So at that time, I hit not only my physical low, but my mental low. You know, this, I had been.
Yeah. And this, I think, happens, right? Like for years, the mental low wasn't there, but they told you that it was the mental low. And then when you can't get the diagnosis, I think many people fall into the frustration of getting the diagnosis.
Yeah. Really. I mean, when you're in pain, you just want to be heard.
Yeah.
And you want to be seen. And you want an answer so that you can fix it, you know? And I was very young. I was only 21 years old. I was living on my own in New York City. I was trying to survive on my own. I had lost the ability to do the thing that I had worked for, you know, my whole life. And I hit complete rock bottom. And so once I received this diagnosis, the medication seemed to be taking the inflammation down. And then a team of doctors at the Houston Medical Clinic in Columbus, Georgia, are the ones who helped me to get my knee and my ankle back in order. I spent a couple of weeks at their clinic doing physical therapy every day. I was in physical therapy from the day out of my surgery on my foot and my knee. And so that helped to get my body back in place. But by that time, it had been a year, and I realized I can no longer be a dancer. And me trying so badly to do this is actually working against my own health and my whole mental state.
Yeah.
So I lived on 123rd Street between Amsterdam and Broadway. And I was on the 20th floor and I overlooked Columbia University campus from the balcony. And whenever I had the strength, I would walk onto campus and just walk around. And something about being on that campus just made me feel good. You know, I was around other young people, other big dreamers who were working towards something in their life. And I realized, like, I just need to start over, and I'm still young, and I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a degree, which I had not considered for myself, even though I come from a family of educators and people who, you know, my siblings all went to college, but that wasn't going to be my path, you know?
Right.
And I just really fell in love with the idea of going somewhere like Columbia that had this, you know, tradition of excellence, and feeling like a sense of belonging on campus. So I applied to one school. I applied to Columbia University through their School of General Studies, which is for non-traditional students who've had a break between their high school and their college years. And they really enjoyed my kind of admissions package. I went a couple times and visited, and thankfully I got in. And I just set my path on retooling. I had to, of course, stay on the medications. I was in the gym all the time, just like trying to get my body back into shape, not for dancing, but just for life. You know, I'm a mover at heart, so I do not feel good being sedentary. And so, you know, it was important for me to stay in the gym and things like that. And when I started to feel a little better, I actually joined a praise dance ministry on campus, which I didn't even know what that was before, when I was, you know, dancing as a professional. Basically, it was a social club that was created by other undergraduate students at Columbia to praise God through movement, just like a chorus does, but it's a praise dance. And many of them were not trained dancers, not professional dancers like I had been, but there was something so beautiful and true about what they were doing. And most of it was gestural, just using their arms. And I was like, well, that's something I can do because I can't use my legs. But by my senior year, I felt so connected with dancing in that way and saying thank you to God for like the gift of being able to express myself and move. I thought I was going to make a complete transition. I studied history in school and I worked on Wall Street school, and I had to finish early because I can only afford 3 years of college. So I just like doubled and tripled up on those credits. And I transferred in some credits from City College. I took classes over the summer and things like that. And so I finished in 3 years thinking I was going to be on Wall Street. And during my senior year, yeah, I think the bug about dance just bit me hard and my body was feeling better. And eventually I ended up back with Dance Theatre of Harlem after the fall after I graduated. And I thought my parents were terrified. They were like, what are you doing?
Of course.
You have a diagnosed disease of the joints and in your body. You've already had 2 knee surgeries, a foot surgery, and now you're older. You know, going back into classical ballet at 24 years old, it's like unheard of.
Right.
It's just not what people do. And so I was like, well, I have my degree. So, you know, if I only have one more year of dancing in me, then I have something to fall back on this time. Yeah. So I danced for 3 more years. I'm sorry. I danced for 6 more years. And then I had some really bad flare ups when I was with Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater.
Yeah.
Thought I was retiring, went back to school. Because now you know that was my place of healing.
Yes.
Just learning something new, diving into something new was so important to my healing, mentally and physically. I studied nonprofit management because I was really interested in now business, the kind of intersection of the arts and business. Yeah, I started teaching when I was in St. Louis, fell in love with that. And eventually, actually, I went back to Alvin Ailey for 3 more years. I worked for them total for six years. Had a back injury. That MRI showed the deterioration of the lower spine. And I was like, okay, yeah, definitely the spondylitis is not being friendly to me.
Right.
And I think it's time. But by that time, I was in my later 30s. I was married. I was, you know, working long distance from my husband. And there was one thing that really changed my diagnosis from reactive arthritis to ankylosing spondylitis. And that was in 2005 when I was touring with Alvin Ailey. I would look around and everything looked really blurry and I couldn't understand what was happening. Yeah. And I came home and I had a uveitis flare. And literally I've basically had chronic uveitis since 2005. And so with that diagnosis, that's what really changed the understanding of my into spondylitis. And from there, I was on Humira. I still am on Humira. And for some time, methotrexate until I thought maybe I would be pregnant and I had to get off the methotrexate. So it's been a long history. I'm sure others who are listening who live with this disease, it's just not linear, you know?
No.
In some ways it, you know, you feel like you're getting better and then all of a sudden you get this flare up and then other things present itself. So it's been quite a journey, but so yeah, I've been lucky to have movement in my life to keep my body, moving.
Yeah. And so you talk sometimes about like a lot of the connecting to the dance and the support you've had, just what you find when you connect with other dancers and the connection between dancers, which I think is so beautiful because personally, I couldn't dance if I didn't have spondylitis, but I think a lot of people, that feeling of movement has got to be so amazing when you're having a bad day, especially with this disease. How throughout, so are you dancing a lot these days now that you're
in Italy? I'm not dancing as much as I would like to, for several reasons. I'm just an older person now. I'm in my mid 40s. There's not a lot for me to do. I've beautifully transferred into the world of higher education, which is exactly in the direction in which I want to go. Being the dean and director of the Juilliard School is a dream job. And it does require me to, it is mostly an administrative job. I do teach, and sometimes I'm the sub. If people are unable to make it to their classes, I teach ballet and I teach modern dance. So I am in motion, but I'm not performing full time or anything like that. I'll take little gigs here and there that are kind of body friendly. But I try to have a movement practice. Some, I would say, months are better than others, depending on the workload that I have. A lot of what I do, I'm sitting in meetings and I'm sitting and talking to students. I'm sitting in the theater. So I definitely feel like my lower back and my hips are not happy most of the time. And I'm trying to incorporate more movement that'll kind of like reverse that sedentary, just the stance. But I hear a lot from young people who are aware of my story and they say, I am 15 years old, I'm 21 years old, I'm 30 years old, I'm a pre-professional dancer or a professional dancer, and I read about what you've dealt with, and I'm wondering if you have any advice, for me as I try to navigate this. And, it's a really beautiful community of people who are experiencing something so unique. Yeah. And it sounds like you yourself have discovered how important it is to have a community of people to lean on and to ask questions to.
Yeah, it's so, where you hear from a lot of dancers, I hear from a lot of the LinkedIn side of the world, right? Like more, I hear from a lot of women who are going through a diagnosis and they're not sure how to talk about it at work or how to deal with it at work. It's so important. And I think for all of us, one of the things is, right, there's so many facets to each one of us. And for you, this journey of disease, I imagine, combined with dance, is it is probably a very unique niche, right? There's probably 3 million people that have jobs, but dancers with something that for many years and many of us is completely debilitating. So what
it's
advice
true. I mean, for yeah, that? I think, well, first of all, there's a certain amount of like pain tolerance, just to be honest, that you have as a professional dancer. You know, point shoes are uncomfortable. If you imagine how you wear, you know, put your feet in heels and spend a whole day, how painful that can be. Of course, you learn how to develop your muscles and to develop the strength, but, you know, to work in a pair of point shoes, to ask your body to do things that are completely unnatural to our anatomy, that already can bring on a certain amount of day-to-day aches and pains. And so for dancers, it's really hard to differentiate what is pain from the actual work and what is pain from the spondylitis. But I've learned that it's just a different type of ache for me that then can lead to like acute pain. The thing that I share with dancers the most is that you know your body best, especially as a dancer. You know every facet of your body. And when something doesn't feel right, you need to listen. And most of the time, you know, if they're still able to move, it's going to be really hard to get that diagnosis if it doesn't show up in the blood work. So I recommend that they be persistent and find a doctor that they really connect with, which can be hard because just like navigating the insurance system, and when you're seeing specialists, of course, you know, you want to make an appointment because you're feeling pain, but the next new patient appointment isn't for like 6 months or something like that. It gets really complicated. And for dancers, that pain management, it's immediate, it's urgent, because this is your livelihood,
right,
you know, that you're working towards. So it's, you know, finding a doctor who really understands a physical body, like find people who work with athletes, find people who work with dancers, that sort of thing. And next, I think most important thing is to find a doctor who is open to have communication with you, like is open to say, if you're having a flare up, email me, or just come in, or, you know, you want to have someone that you feel like are with you along on the journey.
That is
and not like, okay, well, I'll see you in 6 months.
Right. That being able to communicate is, I think it's profound in the journey. It's amazing when you can reach out and be like, I'm at my low point and I don't know what to do. And you get a response in like a couple hours.
Exactly.
It's amazing. And really, like, if you're talking with a lot of female dancers, I mean, females, right, you mentioned like, because you could move, that was, I don't want to call it impeding, but maybe a barrier to the diagnosis.
Yeah.
And then you're a female, which is even a bigger barrier.
Yeah.
You're a Black female, which is even like exponential. To get there, and we often talk here about how do we start to remove those things. Mm-hmm. And I think you probably already know, but I'm sure you've had big, big impact on the direction positively of a number of dancers' lives. Were you open about the AS when you were dancing, or is that something recent?
Well, I never didn't disclose it because everything that I've done has been so public. Even, you know, people were asking like, what happened to Alicia Graff when I retired or when I left Dance Theatre of Harlem? And so it was already communicated out into the world that I was, you know, injured and not so much the illness, but when I graduated Columbia and I went back to Dance City of Harlem, I came back on a real high. I something clicked, and I made that ascent to principal dancer very quickly upon graduation. And I of course made it part of my story. I was very open with suffering from this disease, and so all future employers, company directors, they were aware of what I was dealing with. At Alvin Ailey, there were several times where I'm like, oh my gosh, my elbow is randomly swollen. I don't know what to do about that. I'm going to leave off tour for a day because I need to get a cortisone shot so that I can move my arm with fluidity. Or they were very aware of my situation because at Alvin Ailey, it's a touring company. And sometimes a company would be on the road for 7-8 weeks at a time, not only nationally, but internationally. And I would travel with my Humira, which you have to keep cold. So I'm like, I'm traveling to China. This travel day is going to be 24 hours, you know?
Yeah.
How am I supposed to keep this cold? There's two syringes. So one I will use in like a week and the other I have to keep cold for another like 2 weeks. How am I going to do that? So like the company manager always helped to make sure I had a refrigerator in my hotel rooms. I would travel and get like ice and pack it up. And like, it was so cumbersome. It's a little bit easier now with like specialty pharmacies and how easy it is to order your medication online to get it refilled and they'll send it to like a hotel. But what happens if it's delayed a day and then you've left that city and now this very expensive medication has arrived at a hotel and you've already left? Like that, all of that navigating was exhausting as a dancer, but it was worth it because it kept me in motion. That was a lot.
I bet that was a lot. I can remember traveling with some of the biologics, and I'm not on one now that needs the refrigerator. But yeah, it gets you plan your trips around it.
Like, yeah.
How do I make sure that the ice isn't going to go bad before you get to the next place?
Exactly.
So in terms of your role now, which is amazing, I think like we didn't really celebrate that. This is a job that I would imagine many dancers want to be. And your day-to-day role is education and overseeing Juilliard, essentially, mm-hmm. right? The ballet side.
That's
of it.
I run the entire dance division. So the Juilliard School is comprised of music, dance, and drama. And we currently have about 85 incredible dancers from all over the world. They are world-class dancers. They could enter into companies up after high school, like I did, but they've chosen to study and receive their BFA degrees. So they are like outstanding. I don't know how many superlative words I can state about their level of talent and commitment and their level of artistry. But my job, I am the dean and director. So I am responsible for their academic success. I'm responsible for setting the curriculum. I'm responsible for hiring faculty. I'm responsible for making sure that everything is in order with the educational piece. And then as director, because we sit at a very special cross-section of higher education and performing arts, I'm also responsible for curating performances,
right.
For helping to market those performances, for finding the right choreographers and guests, for choosing the right repertory for them. It's quite an involved job. It can also be very physical because, as I said, sometimes, you know, if a teacher is not able to make it for one reason or the other, I will pop into that studio, teach a ballet class, teach a modern class, which I love. You know, that's the
amazing
place that I feel most comfortable. But it is a big job that requires a lot of dedication, which is something that I'm well suited to. This has been the field that I've loved, you know, forever. So,
and do you find your own experience? Well, right. I mean, I guess thinking back on your timeline, if you would just cruise, like continued to cruise through as a dancer,
I would never be in this position.
Right.
Or it's maybe maybe further, much further down the line. Maybe.
Yeah, it's amazing. Are you the youngest?
I am the youngest and the first Black woman to be in this position, Black person in general.
I love it. Do you find that your journey has made you more empathetic to the students along the way?
Absolutely. When the students are going through injury or just like going through something painful, I always ask them to take their time in healing. Because we're so used to working through pain as dancers, there's like the day-to-day pain that you kind of like push through. And then you have to listen well enough to know this is the type of pain I don't push through. And I'm always encouraging the students, sit down. Right. It's okay. Like, this is not a marathon. Like, this is not a sprint, I should say. We're running a marathon. Yeah. You know, we're running a long distance, cross country, not even race run, you know? And I always tell them, your body is your livelihood, and really it's okay. And sometimes you learn more from stepping out of the space, maybe from observing their colleagues, from watching class, from taking notes. There's so much more that you can learn. And oftentimes just slowing down actually helps to allow dancers to find a new understanding of their artistry and also reminds them how badly they want it.
Yeah.
Because if you are injured and you're like, oh, it's okay. Yeah, you might not be in the right place. If you're injured and you're like, every moment I'm just ready to get up and get back in, then you know that your passion is there, you know.
And so how do you, I know your hashtag is grace and grit, right?
Yeah.
I love that. How do you, like, I'm sure you have bad days still, we all, I think, do. How do you handle those, and what fills your cup when you're having a bad day?
Well, first, I have an incredible family, a very supportive husband who's known me almost 20 years now. We met at Columbia University, so he knows the journey. He was also a professional athlete, a football player, so he also understands what it means to like put your body through so much to achieve this thing that you're passionate about. So I would say number one, his support, my parents' support, and I have two, you know, small kids, and they support me in really beautiful ways too. We support each other, but, you know, I think understanding that it is a journey, and I'm really grateful for where I am right now on that path. That's everything. Like, everything that comes from here is just icing on the cake, because I already reached my North Star. So, right. You know, everything at Juilliard and everything beyond is going to be like, wow, this is just awesome.
That is incredible. Yeah,
and I have a strong faith, and I have a lot of energy, and I try to use that to my advantage. And sometimes I have to remind myself, you need a break. You need to slow down. Or sometimes my body will remind me. That's probably better. Like, my eye will flare up, or like right now my hip is just, it's just not happy with me. I don't exactly know what's happening, but I probably get an MRI, probably, you know, see if there's more arthritis damage, or if it's just telling me, Alicia, you need to stand up and like take some Pilates classes or something, just to get all those muscles kind of aligned and working together again. Who knows? Yeah. But yeah, I have to listen to my body. I have to be able to slow down sometimes.
That's good advice for filling a cup. Any other advice? I know we talked a little bit, or any other tidbits of hope before we wrap up?
Yeah, I would just say to, I don't know what this phrase is, but it's just like, be soft with yourself and be understanding that you're going to have really great days and you're going to have some really hard days. And the ones that come that are really hard, they usually come out of nowhere. You know, you wake up and you're like, oh man, I can't, you're like, I can't even walk today. I can't get out of bed. You know, I try to mark down mentally the days that feel good to remind myself that like not every day is going to be a terrible day. There are some days where, you know, things are feeling pretty good and I'm achieving the things that I've set out to do in my life, despite all of the challenges.
Amazing. Thank you. This has been, again, I'll say it, like you have achieved all of it, right? So on behalf of the community, let me say thank you for being a light for a lot of us. And just, I'm so excited to continue to follow the work you do. And I think it's so meaningful because I think someone who has your experience in such a physical career can blend empathy to make more people successful, even people without spondylitis, right? So they're very lucky to have you there at Juilliard.
Aww,
and yeah, I'm so grateful. And on behalf of Spondylitis Association, we are we're grateful to have you as part of our community. And I would love to just continue the conversation with you as time goes on.
Let's do it. We'll discover more together, I think.
I think so too. Thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank you.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit, educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.